According to the United Nations Refugee Agency, there are currently over 22 million refugees in the world. Add to that to the number of people all over the world who immigrate to other countries every year, and that equals a whole lot of people on the move. Many refugees and immigrants come to America and other developed countries every year. As Adventist Christians, how can we reach out to these people groups and make a difference? Hi, this is Esther Lowe. In this episode of the GYC Beyond podcast, I sit down to a conversation with David Scow. With a passion for mission, both overseas and in America, David Scow is currently working for the organization Reach the World Next Door. Join with us as we discuss ways to reach out to refugees and immigrants in our local communities. Welcome to the GYC Beyond podcast, David. Thank you for joining us and being willing to share with us about some of what you're doing with refugees. So before we start, I just wanted to get people to know you a bit better and find out what's important to you, who you are as a person. So Could you let us know something about your background, where you're from, and how you got to be involved with Reach the World Next Door?
Well, I spent a lot of my growing up in West Africa, so got a bit of that international perspective. I got involved with Reach the World Next Door after spending a year and a half in Egypt, working in publishing in the Middle East.
All right. So, as a young person, when you were growing up, were you in the Adventist Church? Were your parents involved in the church? Did you become
involved? I was. Well, my parents were in the church. I was involved. I got more involved and more intentionally involved as I moved through college, and actually toward the end of college, when I made a more intentional commitment, got some training, and that's probably when I got biggest transition in getting more involved.
That's really awesome. So it was more like a progression for you, a little bit of involvement at the beginning, and it grew and it grew and it grew.
Right.
I'm wondering if you could share with me a defining moment in your life, or one of them that you can think of, where the need for refugees or mission work in general became apparent to you.
It actually probably would be in sitting in a home outside of Sacramento after college. I was doing a Bible study, which was one of the first Bible studies that I had done with people, like an evangelistic type Bible study. And if I remember right, at the end of it, the young man I was studying with, it was about accepting Christ as your Savior. And he had never done that before. And coming from a background of being in the church and most of my friends and social circles being in the church, that really hit home to me to realize that there were people who had not really ever faced that reality of a Savior. And I came away saying, this is real now. This is not just a blessing for him, but working for God with God also gives an insight into God's heart as the kind of joy and excitement that I hadn't felt, but having spent the time personally with him and even laboring in prayer to bring him to that point, there was a lot more joy in his decision than I would have imagined before.
I like how you said that at the end, there was a lot more joy than you could have imagined, and that you hadn't really thought about somebody not having Christ in their life and accepted him before. That was a completely new encounter and experience. And you really got to see the importance of that because you were involved.
Right.
So we have this experience where you're giving Bible studies and you suddenly realize this need that exists where people have never accepted Jesus before. Do you have any other experiences that also kind of pushed you towards being involved?
Another experience that gave me more of that sense of urgency and of some of God's heart maybe with outreach was another spot doing Bible studies, actually. This time was part of a student mission volunteer type year that I spent in Peru, and part of it I shadowed. I wasn't fluent enough in Spanish to really be an independent Bible worker, but I was accompanying an experienced Peruvian Bible worker and learning from him. And we were giving Bible studies in a church that had been planted and then kind of died out. Mm. It was kind of discouraged. It's a small church without a lot of support. Mm-hmm. Districts are big, and pastor would have 20 churches, so mm-hmm. couldn't be there very often to try and encourage this new church. And it was in a home of a woman who had been one of the baptized mm-hmm. members, and got to know the family. And she had, it was a kind of sad story. Her husband was alcoholic and mm. abusive, and she had a daughter in about 8th grade, 14 or 15 years old, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And the Peruvian gentleman, Mikeas, asked if she was going to go to school the next year. Mm-hmm. And the mom said, well, we don't have money to pay for the uniform. School's free, but notebooks and uniform, and we can't afford it. Uh-huh. And he didn't have a lot of money, but he volunteered to pay for that for them.
Wow.
She had one more year to finish her primary education, her mm-hmm. elementary school. And so we came back the next week, said, can we go, go do the shopping? And the mom said, well, actually, she decided she doesn't want to. She ran off to the jungle rivers with her alcoholic boyfriend and decided not to take your offer. And I was really discouraged after that. Mm-hmm. I sat in a park the next day or so, just asking God, what is the point of all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I heard from him, now you have a little bit more of a feeling of how I feel when I see you and so many other people turn mm-hmm. down the offers mm-hmm. that I have for you of a hope in the future, and you should know
mm-hmm.
how much I'm offering you. Wow. Just as much as she should know what kind of choice she is making to choose what she's already seen in her own family as not a good thing.
There's what I'm hearing is two completely different experiences that you had. One was a positive mm-hmm. where this person experiences a desire and they accept Jesus in their life for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is a negative, really. You extend an offer to completely change this person's life so she can finish school and have hope for a better future, and she turns it down
mm-hmm.
for an alcoholic boyfriend. So these two changes...
knowing what an alcoholic abusive yes. family can be.
Right, knowing that already. And then seeing that you can feel in your life, I guess, that God is trying to work through all kinds of people, including your own life, mm-hmm. to bring them to a knowledge of Jesus yeah. and better their lives. So when we come and we talk about refugees and immigrants in particular, that story in Peru was overseas,
mm-hmm.
and the story that you shared before when you're in college, that was in America?
Yes.
Okay. What about if you don't have the money or you just haven't got the opportunity to go overseas, but you feel called to work with refugees or immigrants, or you're just curious, what's something that we can learn about them? What kind of people groups live in America? What kind of religions and backgrounds do they come from?
There's a huge variety of people in America. It's called the melting pot mm-hmm. for a reason. I know the most detail about Houston, where I've been mm-hmm. when working. Just within the Houston area, we have a large Chinese immigrant mm-hmm. population that have been for a long time, Vietnamese population mm-hmm. That have been there decades as well. But we've also been working personally with a Cambodian wow. community. Actually, that one feels like a small neighborhood worth mm-hmm. of almost just picked up from Cambodia and moved. Wow. Everyone in there has a Buddhist temple in the neighborhood, but also just a huge mix of people all through Houston. And mm-hmm. Houston is one of the most diverse places, but that's not the only place.
Wow, yeah.
That's anywhere that you go, there are people from different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere you go, if you have your eyes open for it.
Mm-hmm.
I've met people in gas stations, in grocery stores.
Right.
Just there's also, you can look up where some different ethnicities mm-hmm. are with different resources.
Mm-hmm.
Peoplegroups.info has some on, if you have a major metro area near you, you can look mm-hmm. up what the more larger ethnic mm-hmm. groups are in your area.
Does America's immigration policy have anything to do with where these people groups end up at?
There is. I'm not deeply into the resettlement uh-huh. process to know, but there are parts of the policy that determines where in America mm-hmm. they're sponsored to as refugees. Okay. As immigrants, people have freedom to move right. to where they choose to. So
there's really like this two reasons that people might be here from some of these countries. They're immigrants or they're refugees. And if they're refugees, then they may have been settled in a program.
Right.
And so they all kind of tend to be in the same or similar locations.
Yeah, with refugees, there will be certain cities that are identified mm-hmm. as having good socioeconomic conditions
okay.
and room in the city. You know, they have housing, they have uh-huh. jobs, they have an agency that's willing to support them for a while. And so that mm-hmm. determines the cities that they're placed in, small to medium to large cities.
Right.
It's not always a large city for refugee placements.
Mm-hmm. What religions do these people groups come from?
You can have, again, with refugees, it mm-hmm. tends to be primarily from places that have disruption,
okay.
War or unrest. So recently, a lot of the U.S. refugees, and it kind of goes in waves as mm-hmm. as world events happen. Recently, we've had a lot of refugees from Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
from Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and from also the Horn of Africa, Somalia, Sudan, mm-hmm. Libya to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
But also, historically, we've had Vietnam, Southeast Asia,
mm-hmm.
Cambodia, etc.
Wow, I think this is a really great opportunity, right, to be in a Christian country without even leaving America, impact people from all these different religious backgrounds, like Muslim or Buddhist or Hindu, or you're mentioning it earlier, Chinese. That's a country that has historically been really hard to reach.
It's true, and many of those places are also some of the most difficult mm-hmm. places for Christian work in those countries
mm-hmm.
Because of the war, and because mm-hmm. many of them come from quite close societies, strongly Muslim societies.
Mm-hmm.
Another group we haven't mentioned that is international students as well.
Oh, wow, yeah.
We have students, it's kind of a prestige thing. Many mm-hmm. of the world leaders took their university education in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we probably have the future leaders of, who knows, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, studying mm-hmm. in American universities right now. And unfortunately, many of those international students may spend 4 or more years here and never really make a deep American friend. They may not
wow.
ever have a meal in an American home.
Wow.
But that's a huge opportunity.
That
if
is.
You're a university student,
uh-huh.
Especially if you are at a university that has a lot of international
mm-hmm.
students, public universities often, to open your eyes for these international
mm-hmm.
students that may be in the U.S. in a place that's easy to reach them for a short window of time.
Mm-hmm.
and we also have, I don't know, I should even share the quote from Evangelism.
Oh, yeah, please share the
570.
Quote.
570. It might take me a second to pull it up.
That's fine. I was actually thinking, I think we're thinking of the same quote, and I would love for you to pull that up right now. But just going back where you said that there's, you know, there's people who've spent 4 years here and they've never even eaten a meal in an American person's house. I mean, that's a really simple way to start ministry, right?
It really
Invite
is.
Invite people over for a meal.
Yeah, inviting people over for a meal, or if you're in a dorm situation, you can choose to say, no, can we eat
mm-hmm.
together in cafeteria or at a,
mm-hmm.
at a restaurant as well. But friendship can be
mm-hmm.
a powerful opportunity, a powerful window into people's lives.
Right. And, you know, from my own background here, I've spent a lot of time in the past working with international students at university campuses, and I also spent some time in Lebanon and different places. And I think it's not just for them, but it's also for us, because what I've noticed is it grows me,
mm-hmm.
it grows us in our perspective of the world and in other people and what we can learn by interacting with them. So it's a growing experience when we invite people and spend time with them.
It's a joy.
Yeah. So you have that quote for us.
I do, yes. It's from the book Evangelism, page 570. It says, great benefits would come to the cause of God in the regions beyond if faithful effort were put forth in behalf of the foreigners in the cities of our homeland. Talking about the U.S., though it could apply to other places if you're somewhere else too.
Right.
Among these men and women are some who, upon accepting the truth, would soon be fitted to labor for their own people in this country and in other countries. Many might return to the places from which they came in the hope of winning their friends to the truth. They could search out their kinsfolk and neighbors and communicate to them a knowledge of the third angel's message. Actually, I started before I usually do. Keep going. God would be pleased to see far more accomplished by his people in the presentation of the truth for this time to the foreigners in America than has been done in the past. As I have testified for years, if we were quick in discerning the opening providences of God, we would be able to see in the multiplying opportunities to reach many foreigners in America a divinely appointed means of rapidly extending the third angel's message into all the nations of the earth. God, in his providence, has brought men to our very doors and thrust them, as it were, into our arms that they might learn the truth and be qualified to do a work we could not do in getting the light before men of other tongues.
Tell me more about that last line, that they can do a work that we cannot do.
Yes. So, in a lot of avenues, you know, to reach people, it helps if you can speak their language, or at least the same language that they, a language they speak, even better if it's the language that is close to their heart. If you understand their culture, it can help if you have the legal right to be in the same geographic area.
No kidding.
Language, culture, and proximity. Getting visas to go to Saudi Arabia or Sudan is really almost impossible.
Right.
God can do incredible things, and he does through people who may have other tent-making skills or go as students. But as far as going with a clear missionary purpose, it's not allowed. Then language, from my own personal experience, it takes a long time, even after a year and a half in Egypt and doing more language study than most people around me did, I was still far from able to fluently communicate about spiritual topics.
I can relate to that from being in Lebanon. One person told me that it takes on average 7 years to learn Arabic fluently.
Right. But here we have immigrants, refugees, international students who have put out the effort or are putting out the effort to learn English.
Right.
And so we can communicate in a shared language.
Yeah.
And that can also be an opportunity as well for ministry and connecting to people if there are people that are wanting to practice English or to have extra opportunities for dialogue or for tutoring. But so you've got a shared language. They're in a place where there's religious freedom, but they still have the connections and the social network and the culture and the language to reach back into their own home cultures.
Yeah.
So if we win one person from Sudan or from Somalia or from Saudi Arabia or from Bhutan or Afghanistan, that person may have a huge family and friend network that they may still very likely be in communication with on a regular basis. I've been studying and meeting with a Somali man who's been living in the U.S. for most of his life now.
Wow.
Probably he's early 20s, and he's been here more than a decade, I know. But he is still actively on WhatsApp groups and Facebook groups with others that are of Somali background that aren't all in the U.S. Some of them are still in Somalia.
Oh, wow.
So if we reach one person like that, that may be a person that becomes like an Apostle Paul who can spread that spark to a huge number of people in places that we couldn't go.
Wow. It really is then reaching the world next door.
That's the idea.
And I love how Ellen White, in that quote that you shared earlier, she says, God has thrust them into our...
Right, into our very arms. He's put them at our very doors. It's not a... They're somewhere else. God has actively thrown them, and he's hoping that we will catch the opportunity.
Amazing. Well, so we talked about the religious backgrounds of these people and how if we can win one of these refugees or immigrants to Christ, what they can do for their own people in their own countries is so much more than what we could hope to do just trying to learn language and get through the cultural barriers.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about some of the needs that these people have when they come to a country like America, or I'm originally Australian. Sure. A lot of immigrants also come to, you know, Australia or England or different European countries. What needs do these immigrants and refugees have that we can reach?
It can vary widely. A refugee may be in need of a huge number of things.
Mm-hmm.
I met just in the last few months a family that had moved from Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And they were basically put into an empty apartment without finances and without much local network. Over the weeks, they slowly gathered furniture as people brought them furniture. They didn't. So I was able to be part of sharing some kitchen supplies with them, mm-hmm. and finding people that donated mm-hmm. some beds and other things that were useful to them. A coffee table for their living room,
mm-hmm.
and we actually don't easily share language, but we've developed quite a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
One of their children speaks some English, mm-hmm. and it's clear that we are welcome in their home, received very warmly.
Mm-hmm.
So different things that they've needed range from helping with getting health insurance or health mm-hmm. assistance, paperwork of any sort, driving licenses,
right.
job search, job applications,
uh-huh.
navigating government and school systems.
Yeah.
Some those first arriving, there can be things even as basic as learning how fixtures in a house work. one of my friends actually was a student at the training center that I have been working with described when he was a refugee
mm-hmm.
Coming and not knowing how to open a door
because
he had not used a doorknob before.
Oh, wow.
So simple things that we don't uh-huh. think about anyone ever learning,
mm-hmm.
but they are that huge navigating a different
uh-huh.
world. And then also language. Language,
right.
That's a big one as well.
And I guess the needs might be different based on the people group. So, you know, someone who is a refugee from Syria,
mm-hmm.
they've lived in a house of doors.
Yes.
But someone who's a refugee from Sudan may not have.
He may have spent
his whole life
in a refugee tent camp.
Right. So that their needs are broad and diverse.
Yes. And so the real thing is simply being present and building trust and,
mm-hmm.
and listening to their needs, because one person may need something and the other person may have that
mm-hmm.
already well taken care of. But friendship and availability.
Uh-huh. And I like how you mentioned friendship. I guess for those listeners and for us who have moved countries, it's amazing when you go to another country and then you suddenly realize, I don't have a network.
Right.
I don't know people here. And that is a very real need. First off, is just social contact, right?
Right.
So tell me now, like, about some organizations. And, you know, I live here in America, but I'm honestly not sure I know of an organization other than Reach the World Next Door that would help me to be able to connect with some of these people. How can a young person say, like, I want to help out, I want to do something in my area? How do they get in touch with that?
Well, that's a really good question. Reach the World Next Door would be one
mm-hmm.
option.
Where is Reach the World Next Door?
Reach the World Next Door. The training center itself is outside of Houston,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a website that has information on how to reach out,
mm-hmm.
An online training kit at reachtheworldnextdoor.com.
Mm-hmm.
They also have some other websites that might point you to. I mentioned peoplegroups.info.
Mm-hmm.
That's a website that tracks where people are in the world and
right.
Not just their place of origin, but also where they've migrated to
and
where you who you might find, say, in Seattle. Or
that was peoplegroups.info.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. About Reach the World's website.
ReachTheWorldNextDoor.com.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any other ways that someone can reach out? Do you have to be part of an organization?
You don't have to be part of an organization. Another contact point might be to look up refugee resettlement agencies.
Mm.
Right now, the flow of refugees has really been slowed down, just
mm-hmm.
national immigration policy.
Mm-hmm.
But there are still refugees that have come in the past and are still here,
mm-hmm.
and there's still a trickle, and it could pick up again
mm-hmm.
As things change. But that if you look up, there's probably in any decent-sized
mm-hmm.
city or metro area at least one refugee resettlement agency, and oftentimes they are looking for, very, very welcoming to having groups adopt people as they come in. So
mm-hmm.
that could include welcoming them at the airport. You may be the first face that they
wow.
see as they show up, and then being there as their family, their social support,
mm-hmm.
helping them set up their apartment, helping them navigate
mm-hmm.
this. How do I learn my way around? Where's the store? Where are good places to buy
mm-hmm.
things? What? Just all of these new questions. If you've ever moved and been in an
right.
unfamiliar place, that are amplified when it's across languages and cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, groups that would adopt could be a church group or a
mm-hmm.
Sabbath school. Or just a group of friends that says, we're willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Refugee Resettlement Agency could put you in touch with someone that they are coordinating who's
uh-huh.
coming.
That's great. That's really practical. I notice that everything that can be done, it's very practical stuff that anyone can do, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anyone can help someone meet them at the airport, for
right.
example, right? Or help someone set up their house. I love how practical that is. Let's just bring this podcast to a close, and I was just wondering if you could tell me in one or two sentences the why about getting involved. Why should a young person like myself get involved with ministry to refugees and immigrants?
There's a lot of different whys.
Mm-hmm.
We read one that it's an opportunity that God has put in our hands
mm-hmm.
To make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, as we mentioned, as we work with God and put our lives in His hands,
mm-hmm.
it changes us too.
Uh-huh.
But if we love Christ, we can't help but want to share that with others.
Oh, yeah.
And as we share, that love grows.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to have that more vibrant life as well, maybe
mm-hmm.
maybe you aren't feeling at this moment just compelled to go out and share with others.
Mm-hmm.
But if you begin sharing in even just the practical ways, and God will grow those opportunities and grow your joy and your walk with Him
mm-hmm.
as you let Him grow and work in your life.
Right. So to summarize, the why is really about for them and for us.
And for us.
So God can work in both of our lives.
Right.
Thank you so much for taking part in this interview. We really appreciate you coming here. And for those who are listening, if you'd like to get involved with Reach the World Next Door, that was reachtheworldnextdoor.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Much appreciation for David Scow's contribution by sharing with us. I hope you have been challenged, as I have been, to look around in your local community for opportunities to make an eternal impact.